Hello and welcome to Volume 45, Number 23 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 6th of June 2025. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Margaret and Desney. And in the news, both Out There and Comic-Con festivals complete successful runs. More peer development, this time at the Welly. And do we have to get used to avoiding dangerous moths, or rather their siblings? Okay, it's another good week for news stories, but first we have a birthday. So best wishes and many happy returns to June Stamp for this coming Thursday the 12th. Have a wonderful day, June. Yes, have a great day. It's time now for some news, so over to Margaret and Desney.
Roadworks fines issued by County Council. More than £680,000 in fines have been dished out to companies for Norfolk roadworks which overran or breached conditions. Norfolk County Council has released new figures which revealed that in 2024 to 25, it collected £345,000 in fines, where roadworks overran by 1,317 days, the equivalent of more than 3.5 years. County Hall also issued 2,809 fixed penalty notices to companies which dug up roads without necessary permits or for breaching permit conditions, netting the authority a further £340,000. The fines range from £80 to £500, depending on the offence. The council is likely to collect even more fines next year, as the government has decided to double the penalties. The charges for overrunning, imposed in 306 cases where work continued beyond the scheduled completion date, are also likely to increase. At present, the council can only apply fines on working days, but from January next year, the authority will also be able to charge firms for non-working days as well. The council, which is responsible for coordinating and managing roadworks, issued more than 44,000 street and roadwork permits last year, with utility companies and developers accounting for 75% of all works. 7,000 of the permits were for unplanned emergency works, which often create the most disruption, and 5,400 were rejected as the proposals were not acceptable. But Graham Plant, the Conservative-controlled Council's Cabinet Member for Highways, Infrastructure and Transport, said, with 74 different utility companies having the legal right to do work, the Council's powers were limited under national legislation. He said, we are doing everything within our power to manage the impact of roadworks on Norfolk's communities, but the reality is that we don't have the authority to stop or delay many of these works. Utility companies have a legal right to dig up our roads, and in emergency cases, they can start work before even notifying us. While this lack of control makes it incredibly difficult to protect residents from disruption, we do hold third parties to account and will issue fines and reject permits when we need to. The figures were released after a question submitted to the Council's Cabinet by Mike Sands, Labour County Councillor for Beauthorpe. Mr. Sands said, utility companies sometimes have to dig up roads to deal with an emergency and seek a traffic regulation order retrospectively. Whilst that is perfectly reasonable, it seems that they are then in less of a hurry to backfill and make good their repair, leaving the disruption caused to linger on much longer.
And we've had a royal visitor to Galston. Volunteers who keep a daily lookout over the Norfolk coast have enjoyed a visit from a member of the royal family. As part of Volunteers Week, Princess Anne visited the National Coast Watch Institution, NCI, station in Galston on Wednesday, June the 4th. She is patron of the charity, which is entirely run by volunteers. The Galston station opened in 1995 and is based on the town pier, where the old lighthouse and Coast Guard station once stood. From their lookout, 43 volunteers, including trainees, monitor the coastline every day from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. in the summer months. Last year, they logged more than 500 vessel movements a month and helped HM Coast Guard in 8 incidents. 4 more have been logged so far in 2024. Princess Anne was welcomed by Deputy Lord Lieutenant of Norfolk, Jane Cater, and met NCI Chairman Stephen Hand, Station Manager Bob Griffiths, Deputy Manager Gary Hitchings, and volunteers Tom Foster and Barry Bannum. She toured the watch room and later attended a reception at the nearby Pier Hotel. Among those present was 84-year-old Brenda Myhill, a volunteer of 21 years, who recalled once spotting a man thrown into rough seas from a boat entering the harbour. "We reported it and the lifeboat rescued him," she said. "If we weren't there, he might not have been seen." Chairman Stephen Hand said, "We use our eyes, ears and technology to keep watch. Last year, 347 people were rescued after being seen by NCI watchkeepers. That's a jumbo jet full of people." With 60 stations and 3,000 volunteers across England and Wales, most do a 3 to 4 hour shift each week. "It's rewarding," said Mr. Hand, "because we make a difference." The Princess also unveiled a plaque and presented long service awards to 3 volunteers.
RAF Nita said radar operational. Once a secret sentinel of the Cold War, a giant radar in the Norfolk countryside is being reawoken. This weekend, residents across the county may start spotting a new Wi-Fi network appearing on their phones. Called Chidziva Array T84 Radar, it is part of a tech trial based out of the decommissioned RAF Nettleshead radar station near Horning. The site has been silent for decades, but over the past 2 years, tech entrepreneur William Sacchetti has been transforming its iconic Type 84 radar into the hub for a new kind of internet. "We've taken a Cold War radar that once scanned the skies for bombers and adapted it to serve the public," Mr. Sacchetti said, "and it now forms the backbone of a resilient communications network." The project uses long-range, low-RAR radio technology, a low-power, high-range system already used around the world in emergency response and by hobbyists. While typical low-RAR setups use small rooftop aerials, the Chidziva Array taps into the power and range of the radar's antenna, which are capable of picking up faint signals from miles away. Using a mesh network architecture, signals bounce between low-cost nodes, small devices anyone can buy and install, before reaching the master antenna at RAF Nettleshead. The system is designed to continue functioning even if mobile networks fail, offering a community-based alternative for emergency communication. "There's nothing to be alarmed about," Mr. Sacchetti said. "We're operating entirely on legal public frequencies, and this system is designed to serve, not disrupt. It's an emergency-ready backup, and it works. If there is a power outage, or there are floods, or you're stuck somewhere, you'll be able to connect to this network without a signal. As he prepares to launch the new network, Mr. Sacchetti also hopes that the radar itself will spin again. In the years since it was decommissioned, however, some of the array's supporting structure has degraded. I'm hoping to get National Lottery funding to restore the radar, Mr. Sacchetti said. 100% it will spin again. There are already a number of nodes across the county, with one of them at the pub Last Bar Standing in Norwich. Mr. Sacchetti first started developing the network for his company's autonomous robots and self-driving vehicles, but then decided to also open the infrastructure to the public for emergency use. The project, which cost approximately £250,000, was developed with the help of online communities, ex-MOD engineers who worked on the original radar, and the nearby RAF Air Defence Radar Museum, which helped archive technical data.
A new radio station has begun broadcasting for the first time in Norfolk. Broadland Radio, the new home of local radio hosts Stephen Bumfrey and Rob Chandler, started broadcasting last Monday after making the switch from test broadcast to DAB. Managing Director Bob Norman has said that an immense amount of work has gone into getting the station broadcasting. I'm overwhelmingly happy and positive with the product. I think it's just right, he said. It's vibrant and upbeat. You're attached to the localness of it. Chandler presented the breakfast show on Heart Radio, former Radio Broadland, for 14 years with co-presenter Chrissy Jackson before joining Radio Norwich. Bumfrey left BBC Radio Norfolk in 2023 after presenting the afternoon show on the local platform since 2009. Mr. Norman added that the feedback has been overwhelmingly positive and has been coming in thick and fast. The volume of feedback is greater than I anticipated. It's been overwhelmingly positive right across the board. People genuinely seem excited and delighted.
A paedophile from Great Yarmouth has been jailed for sexual offences against children. Darren Sear Trevor of Harley Road was sentenced to 40 months in prison at Ipswich Crown Court. Earlier, the 37-year-old pleaded guilty to causing and inciting a girl under 13 to engage in sexual activity in Great Yarmouth in April this year. He also pleaded guilty to breaching his sex offenders register requirements of notifying the authorities of changes to where he was living.
The full lineup for Great Yarmouth and Waveney Pride's 2025 main event has been announced. The celebration of love, diversity and community will feature a host of acts, including drag artists, vocalists and aerial performance on September the 6th. Various drag artists are set to perform and the event will be held at the Drill House between 12:30 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. and will also feature vocal performances from Charlie Pixie, Amrik Channa and Jay Mack. The headliner for the event is Victoria Scone, known for her appearances on RuPaul's Drag Race UK and RuPaul's Drag Race Canada versus the World. A spokesman for Great Yarmouth and Waveney Pride said, "Get ready for an unforgettable celebration of love, diversity and community." Great Yarmouth and Waveney Pride is thrilled to announce the full lineup of incredible acts set to grace the stage at our main event in 2025. Prepare to be dazzled by a sensational array of talent hosted by the fabulous Big Tasty, who will also be performing alongside a breathtaking aerial arts group. Don't miss out on this spectacular event. Tickets are on sale now and can be purchased via our website, and that's gywpride.org. I'll say that again, gywpride.org, all one word. The celebration doesn't stop there. Stay tuned for upcoming announcements regarding the after party, which promises another incredible headliner and a fantastic lineup of acts to keep the party going late into the night. Join us for GYW Pride 2025 and be part of our truly special day, celebrating Pride, unity and the vibrant LGBTQIA+ community.
A bid to build 80 houses on a former football club ground has been recommended for approval. Badger Building is seeking permission to build the homes at Emerald Park, the former home of Galston FC off Wood Farm Lane in Galston. Plans also include the associated garages, access road, open spaces and landscaping, as well as 178 parking spaces. The site, a 20-minute walk from Galston High Street, would have a mix of 2, 3 and 4-bedroomed houses. Currently, the plans are for 76 homes on the market, while 4 1-bedroom flats would be affordable housing. Vehicular access would be off Wood Farm Lane, while a path for pedestrians would lead across Magdalen Recreation Ground and join Edinburgh Avenue. The plans are facing 3 objections from neighbours who have raised concerns over the level of development. But planning officials said the impact of the proposed dwellings on the wider community has been tested and considered acceptable. The plans were discussed at a meeting of Great Yarmouth Borough Council's Development Management Committee on Wednesday, June the 4th. Planners have recommended that councillors approve the bid. In 2021, the Borough Council gave outline planning permission for demolishing the football ground and building 97 houses on the site. Originally, Galston FC had hoped to play their home games at a new ground at East Norfolk Sixth Form College. However, last year, the club said that the pitch development at the college was no longer a viable option and announced they would move back to their original home, the recreation ground. In the meantime, they were playing their home games at the Wellesley Ground in Great Yarmouth.
More care homes could close in a major reorganisation of the way Norfolk looks after hundreds of people. Leaders at Norfolk County Council want new companies to take on and invest in 30 residential care homes and housing with care schemes currently run by Norse Care, which the council owns. Council leaders are optimistic private operators will take over the sites, but concede some homes may shut if they fail to attract interest. Andrew Jameson, Deputy Lead and Cabinet Member for Finance at Conservative-controlled County Hall, said he believed the shake-up would mean better facilities for Norfolk people overall, with an increase in the number of beds available. Mr. Jameson said, "The key objective is to get what is best for residents of Norfolk. I believe this is an opportunity to get high-quality, modern care homes built quickly, in the right places and at the right price. We will end up with some cracking, state-of-the-art care homes in Norfolk, and I honestly think this is a win-win situation. I think companies will be interested in all of them, and I aim to get the best possible deal for Norfolk. I don't think closures will happen, but if there is not a reason to have a care home in a certain area, then I won't rule it out. But what I would say is that I think it's extremely likely we would end up with more beds across the whole of the estate than we currently have." Norfolk County Council's contract with Norse Care expires next March, and the Cabinet will meet today to consider what happens after that. Norse Care currently has 20 residential care homes, of which 17 homes and 484 beds are provided to County Hall's Adult Social Care Department through a care contract. 3 Norfolk homes run by Norse Care, Springdale Care Home in Brundle, Berman House in Terrington St Clement and Linden Court in Wotton recently shut, with the company saying they were no longer fit for purpose. Norse Care also has housing with care scheme in 15 sites, with 627 self-contained flats. Mr. Jameson said market testing showed companies were interested in taking on one of the sites. But opposition leaders have questioned the lack of historic investment in the homes. Mr. Jameson said £47 million had been spent on care provision, but that planned further investment had stalled due to the pandemic and rising interest rates. He said the council's own financial pressures meant there were limits on how much he could spend on capital projects. Which homes and schemes are affected locally? They are In Residential Care, Beecham House, Chedgrave, and Lydia Evercourt in Galston, and Housing with Care, St Augustine's Place in Galston, and The Lawns, Great Yarmouth.
Much more news coming shortly, but first, some news and a request from Vision Norfolk. And this is from Edward Bates from the Great Yarmouth Hub. It's titled Understanding Technology Use for People with Vision Loss, and it reads, we know that a range of technologies, from phones and Alexas to speaking clocks and to remote monitoring systems, are increasingly being used to help people stay connected and living independently in their own homes. But we want to learn more about how this is, isn't, or could work better for people with vision loss who are 60 years old and over. Vision Norfolk are hosting a series of workshops to understand more about your experiences of digital technologies, both good and bad, what technologies you do actually use, what they help you to do, and what difficulties or challenges you may have, and what you would like to be able to do using technologies. We also want to hear from people who don't use technologies and to understand why that is. We would like, therefore, to invite you to participate in a workshop being held with Vision Norfolk at 12 Hall Quay, Great Yarmouth, NR31HP, on the 11th of August from 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. We will be able to offer a voucher both to thank you for your time and to cover costs incurred through your involvement in this study. If you are interested, please call Edward Bates on 01493 7459 973. That's 01493 745 973. Or alternatively, you can email him on edward.bates@visionnorfolk.org.uk. That's edward.bates, B-A-T-E-S, at visionnorfolk, all one word, .org.uk, to register your interest or find out more. Or you can email the researcher, Alison Tingle, on a.tingle@hearts.ac.uk, or telephone her on 07842 323 500. And we'll play this request again next week to give you time for thought. Right, Desney and Margaret are sitting with eager anticipation for me to invite them to give us the second part of this week's news, which will be followed very closely by Desney's look at next week's TV.
The local MP has called the council childish for turning off the comments to a social media post they made about flying the Progress Pride flag at the town hall. Great Yarmouth Borough Council took to Facebook to celebrate flying the flag at its headquarters in Hall Plain. In a post made on the 2nd of June, the council said, "This morning, we proudly raised the Pride flag at the town hall to mark the start of the Pride Month, a time to celebrate love, identity and the vibrant LGBTQ+ community. By flying the Pride flag, we reaffirm our commitment to standing with the LGBTQ plus community today and every day. Happy Pride Month. Mr. Lowe, who does not agree with what the Pride flag represents, commented on the post, "Why not fly flags that represent all residents?" The politician's comment saw at least 2,200 reactions with much support for it, and in turn the council turned the comments off on its post. The council explained, "As responsible owners of this page and in our commitment to fostering an inclusive and respectful online environment, we have decided to turn off comments on this post. While we respect that everyone is entitled to their opinion, social media is not always the most constructive space for certain discussions. Thank you for your understanding." Mr. Lowe criticised the council's handling of the matter and urged them to allow a debate around the topic. He said, "Blocking comments is childish. Have the debate, let the constituents raise their issues. They pay their council tax, they should be allowed to have their say. Flags should be raised that represent all constituents, ones that unite, not divide." The MP has previously said the Progress Pride flag, which is a redesign of the older Pride flag, promoted gender identity ideology over scientific reality. Mr. Lowe said the flag should not be on display in hospitals, schools and other public institutions, and has called it a dangerous woke nonsense and biologically inaccurate.
The new hospital to serve the Great Yarmouth and East Suffolk areas could be up to 10 stories high, 5 times taller than the current facility. In January, the government confirmed that the James Paget Hospital in Galston will be rebuilt, with work expected to begin between 2027 and 2028. Health bosses say the new building would increase capacity and meet growing demand at a hospital that currently serves 250,000 people in East Norfolk and Waveney. The development would be built next to the existing facility, which would remain open during construction. Papers lodged with Great Yarmouth Borough Council say that the new hospital will be either 45 metres or 50 metres in height, depending on whether there is a helipad on the roof. This could tower over the current building, which is only 2 stories tall. The new hospital would also have 630 beds, 80 more than the current facility, as well as 2 multi-storey car parks with up to 10 levels each, providing 2,000 spaces. Plans also include a new helipad and access points, including a main entrance at the junction of Wood Farm Lane and Hodds Lane off Beacon Park. That part of the proposal has drawn some concerns from 3 neighbours, who questioned whether the new entrance would be able to cope with the expected volume of traffic. Another neighbour, meanwhile, said the proposed height of the building seemed excessive if it was only gaining 80 more beds. Once the new hospital is operational, the existing main building would be demolished, though several key units, such as the Education and Training Centre, the Louise Hamilton Centre and the MRI suite, will be retained. Currently, the hospital is seeking the Borough Council's opinion on the Environmental Impact Assessment, as the EIA, with 2 planning applications set to be submitted this year. These include an outline application covering the full redevelopment and a separate full application for enabling works, such as site clearance and new parking facilities.
Wacky mascot fun has been enjoyed by families at Great Yarmouth Seafront. The island at the Waterways Cafe was full of laughter and excitement as the Mascot Race 2025 took centre stage. On Thursday, May the 29th, mascots from several local organisations in and around Great Yarmouth participated in lively pedalo races, cheered on by more than 150 spectators. The much-anticipated event drew people of all ages for a day of spirited competition and entertainment. Lee Brown, event organiser, said, we were absolutely thrilled with the turnout and the atmosphere. The mascot race has become a fantastic way to celebrate local organisations, bring the community together and simply enjoy a great day out during the May half term. Corporal Raff from the 221 Air Cadets emerged as the winner of the closely contested final, with Bertie Badger from St John Ambulance taking second place. As well as the races, the day was full of arts and crafts, family activities and refreshments at the Waterways Cafe. Organisers expressed gratitude to all the mascots, local groups, volunteers and spectators for their participation and announced plans to expand the event in 2026.
Visitors to a popular aquarium can enjoy smoother walkways after a recent upgrade. Sea Life Great Yarmouth has had new resin-bound surfaces installed, making it easier for wheelchairs and pushchairs to get round the attraction. The upgrade was made possible thanks to a partnership between Studios East, Resins R Us and the Firminger Group. New flooring and steps have been added around the ocean tank for a seamless viewing experience. The project has also brought visually striking new floors to enhance the experience. New in-tank theming was also installed by Studios East Limited as part of the project. This consists of a 17th century shipwreck depiction. Sound and lighting were installed by the Firminger Group. Matthew Brister, Operations and Transport Manager at Resins R Us, said, "It's fantastic to see how high-quality resin-bound surfacing can transform internal spaces as well as external, both aesthetically and in terms of accessibility. We're proud to have supported Studios East and Sea Life Great Yarmouth in creating an environment that is welcoming and exclusive for all visitors. The improvements were completed ahead of the busy spring and summer season." Daniel Harvey from Studios East said, "We chose the resin-bound material as it offers excellent permeability and slip resistance, ensuring a safe and long-lasting solution that improves the overall visitor experience. The new resin-bound system not only enhances accessibility, but also complements the centre's indoor spaces with a clean, durable and visually appealing surface." Julie Curtis, Operations Manager at Sea Life Great Yarmouth, said, "Our guests' comfort and accessibility are top priorities for us. The new resin flooring and stairs make a noticeable difference to how easily families, wheelchair users and all visitors can enjoy everything we have to offer. We're delighted with the result and grateful to our local partners for their expertise."
An energy giant recruiting for 200 new jobs in the town presents real opportunities for local people, a councillor has said. RWE will begin recruiting for permanent roles at its Norfolk Wind Farm operations and maintenance base in Great Yarmouth early next year. Councillor Daniel Candon, Cabinet Member for Economic Development and Growth at Great Yarmouth Borough Council, has welcomed the news, saying it is a clear sign that our town is leading the way in the UK's energy future. "The commitment of 200 new jobs is fantastic news for Great Yarmouth," he said. "For years, we've been at the forefront of offshore energy and innovation, and this announcement shows that the rest of the country is finally starting to take notice. These jobs mean real opportunities for local people and renewed confidence in Great Yarmouth as a powerhouse in the energy sector." The permanent roles at RWE's South Deans Peninsula Port Base will support the construction and maintenance of its Norfolk Offshore Wind Zone. The project is made up of three wind farms that will generate enough clean energy to power more than 4 million UK homes. Speaking at the Southern North Sea Conference, SNS 2025, at the Norfolk Showground in May, RWE's Senior Operations and Maintenance Packages Manager, Richard Beck, said the company will aim to recruit locally. He said RWE is already engaging with apprentices enrolling on courses at colleges across the region. There will be a high demand for these roles, he said, speaking at the annual event hosted by the East of England Energy Group, EEEGR. There are fantastic careers for life, and we've been seeing the seeds in the community. RWE's Norfolk Offshore Wind Zone is made up of three projects, Vanguard West, Vanguard East and Boreas. The projects have secured seabed rights, grid connections, development consent orders and all other essential permits.
Invasive moths, which pose a health risk to people and pets when in caterpillar form, have been spotted in Norfolk. Officials at Norfolk County Council are monitoring trees in the county after sightings of individual oak processionary moths. While breeding populations have not been found in Norfolk yet, public health chiefs at County Hall fear it is just a matter of time before they are, because climate change is creating the ideal conditions for the pest. Experts are concerned because the caterpillars of the moth and their nests of white silken webbing contain hairs which can trigger severe allergic reactions, including skin rashes, eye irritation and respiratory issues. June to August is the greatest risk period, when the caterpillars emerge to feed before turning into adult moths. The Forestry Commission says people should not touch the caterpillars or their webs or try to dispose of nests themselves. The oak processionary moth, otherwise known as Thaumatopia processioniae, well, every day's a school day here at Grapevine, I've never heard those words before, that's native to southern Europe, but was accidentally introduced to London in 2006. Since then, populations of the moth have been gradually migrating northwards. At a meeting of County Hall's Conservative-controlled Cabinet on Monday, councillors discussed a report about the impacts of climate change, which included a section about the worrying spread of the moth. The report stated, as temperatures rise, Norfolk's climate is becoming more hospitable to the species. Given their current northward migration, the team estimates there will be breeding populations in Norfolk in the next 2 to 5 years. Council leader Kay Mason-Billig said, I'm slightly concerned when I see this report about the oak processionary moth. I know we see it on the continent. I've certainly seen it in places like Portugal. Everyone there knows how to deal with them and knows what it means. We're told not to touch them, not to go near them. They might look nice and furry and sort of strokeable, but their hairs can irritate the skin quite intensely. I know it doesn't necessarily affect everyone, but I would suggest if you see these things, don't let your children or your dogs anywhere near them, because it can have quite detrimental effects. The Forestry Commission urges people to report any sightings via the Tree Alert portal or by email to opm@forestrycommission.gov.uk.
The region's troubled mental health trust has been accused of nepotism and making career progression more difficult for ethnic minority employees in a £47,000 report. The damning study also identified rife and unfair recruitment processes at the Norfolk and Suffolk NHS Foundation Trust, NSFT. The organisation commissioned the research itself to investigate the experiences of its ethnic minority workforce. It was led by former NHS Equality Director Yvonne Coghill and involved interviews with members of staff and an analysis of recruitment data from 2021 to 2024. It found that the higher up the pay scale roles were, the greater the proportion of white employees. The study, which will be discussed by the Trust's Board of Directors this week, found white people made up 25% of the Trust's applicants, but 79% of all appointments. The report claimed the Trust had a culture of widespread and problematic nepotism. It adds, many of the BAME, Black, Asian and Minority Ethnic, staff in the Trust feel weary, tired of hearing that something is going to be done to improve race equality and nothing concrete being done to improve the situation. Nepotism and unfair recruitment processes were pointed out as being rife within the organisation. It is not the first time such accusations have been levelled at the organisation. In 2022, its deputy chief executive, Kath Byford, spoke of the need to eradicate a clan culture in the trust. Faisal Sethi, the trust chief medical officer, said, "Race discrimination is something NSFT takes extremely seriously. Through improving the experience of our diverse workforce, we will help build a safer, kinder, better NSFT, one where every colleague feels they belong and every service user and patient receives the very best of care." The Workforce Race Equality Report forms an essential part of our learning and development and is part of our commitment to make our trust an organisation that genuinely embraces cultural diversity and racial equality.
No, it's not an invasion. As if you hear the rumble of a large formation of military aircraft flying overhead this week, they are rehearsing for the King's birthday celebrations. The aircraft will be practising for their flypast as part of the King's birthday celebrations on June the 14th, either on Tuesday or Wednesday, depending on the weather. The planes will gather out over the North Sea and get into formation between 10 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. They will then make their way over East Anglia in the Beccles and Bungay area. The aircraft will also be visible over Harleston, Attleborough, Wyndham, Wotton and Swaffham as they funnel together and head northwest between 11:30 a.m. and 12:15 p.m. They will continue to head northwest over King's Lynn and Marham between 11:35 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. before continuing towards Cambridgeshire and ended up over Lincoln. The exact planes taking part in the flypast are yet to be confirmed, but last year the display featured a range of modern-day stealth fighter jets, including the Red Arrows. On the day of the actual celebrations, the planes will take a different route, funnelling down towards London rather than heading west. The route for the celebrations on June the 14th will not vastly differ from that taken by the aircraft during VE Day celebrations last month.
Council agrees new animal offences fines. Animal abusers or people with dangerous pets could soon face fines of up to £5,000 after Great Yarmouth Borough Council agreed to introduce tougher powers to tackle offenders. Conservative-controlled cabinet members agreed to the new fixed penalty notices, FPNs, this week. The potentially hefty fines can be used on people committing animal health and welfare offences following new legislation introduced in 2022. Depending on the severity of the incident, the council will be able to fine people £350 for low-level issues, rising to a maximum of £5,000 for serious incidents. At a cabinet meeting this week, Deputy Leader Graham Plant welcomed the new fines but said they should be higher. However, the amount an individual can be fined is limited by national guidance. GYBC could issue fines for offences which fall under the Dangerous Wild Animals Act 1976 and the Animal Welfare Act 2006. This could include dog fighting, out-of-control pets causing harm to others or causing unnecessary suffering to an animal. Fines can be reduced by 50% if paid within 14 days.
A bid to convert a former council office into a wheelchair-accessible house has been given the green light by planners. Great Yarmouth Borough Council wants permission to change the use of the former South Yarmouth Housing Office in the heart of the Middlegate estate into a three-bedroom home. Hopes that the property could help Town Hall meet demand for accessible housing in the borough have been given a boost after planners recommended the bid is approved. Figures from the council show that 14 households are registered and assessed as requiring an accessible home, but only 4 3-bedroom houses out of a total of 5,800 in the borough are fully wheelchair accessible homes. The South Yarmouth Housing Office was vacated by the council in February this year. The application was discussed by councillors at a meeting of the Development Management Committee on Wednesday, June the 4th. The result is not yet to hand.
Comic-Con 2025. Sci-fi and superhero fans flocked to a Comic-Con event over the weekend, making it a success for another year. The event, held at the Great Yarmouth Racecourse, brought together fans from Norfolk and further afield, dressed up as superheroes, villains and other characters from science fiction and anime. Held on May the 31st and June the 1st, the venue saw many people enjoying celebrity guest panels, autograph sessions, cosplay competitions and retro gaming zones. Special guests included stars from The Rise of the Foot Soldier and Stranger Things, and Doctor Who, much to the delight of fans who got to take photos with them and get unique insights into what it is like to work on the shows. Local vendors, artists and independent creators contributed to the atmosphere, selling merchandise, artwork and collectibles. Organisers of the event said, "That's a wrap for Great Yarmouth Comic Con 2025, sponsored by ATI Tank Hire Limited. We thank you and everyone involved from the bottom of our hearts for your support."
A massive arts festival with more than 150 hours of entertainment has drawn tens of thousands of people. The Out There International Festival of Outdoor Arts and Circus, now in its 17th year, featured performances from 60 companies and over 250 artists from May the 28th to May the 31st. 17 international companies from Catalan to New Zealand participated, with 18 world or UK premieres and 9 shows originating from Great Yarmouth. A spokesperson for Out There Arts said, "Great Yarmouth came together to celebrate the collective endeavour that is arts and culture in the most accessible way possible and free for all." Alongside the festival, the new National Centre for Outdoors Arts and Circus, the Ice House, was launched. A play street was constructed and a project by Connecticut People, Beach of Dreams, entertained festival goers. The festival also hosted Fresh Street No. 5, with 400 delegates and artists attending from around the world. They discussed and planned the future of outdoor arts. The spokesperson added, "Thanks go to all of the artists, volunteers, crew, hosts, security team, access team, staff and board for helping produce and perform such a tremendous festival."
A man died after he was hit by a car while riding his electric bicycle home from a pub in a neighbouring village. Alan Tedder, 62, was heading back to Ludham after a trip to the Falgate Inn in Potterheim when the accident happened early on Saturday evening. He was taken to the hospital where he died of his injuries. Police say the accident also involved a Nissan X-Trail car. No arrests have been made, but the road remained closed for 14 hours after the tragedy while an investigation was launched. The collision occurred on the A1062 at around 6:45 p.m, halfway between Ludham and Potter, near the junction with Fritton Lane. Locals have complained that the stretch between the two Broads villages is an accident black spot, and the issue was already due to be discussed at a Ludham Parish Council meeting. Mr. Tedder, who was known as Albie, lived in Ludham and owned a building firm, Ludham Construction and Design Limited. Friends who asked not to be named said he was a much loved and adored man who will be sorely missed. They said that he was always friendly and happy and took time to say hello to everybody as he passed. His death has been described as a huge loss to the village, and he was said to be highly thought of and very well respected. He regularly cycled to the Falgate Inn, which is about 2 miles away, and was said to be often on his bike and a strong cyclist. Flowers have been laid at the roadside where the crash occurred, with a message on one of the bouquets reading, "Sleep tight, mate, you will be missed." The accident site is very close to the High Mill private hire swimming pool, which is run by Marion Brooks. He said the stretch of road was notorious among locals. "I know there have been 2 cars written off in the last 2 years. One was a client, hit getting out of my swimming pool, and another was a classic Triumph TR2 coming out of the crossroads," he added. "My neighbours say that there have been 6 serious incidents in the last few years, and we are campaigning with the Ludham Parish Council. Hopefully the meeting will be successful, because we want action to be taken to have it addressed. It is sad that it takes a tragedy like this to get the council's attention, and that's even if they will listen. Written off cars and non-fatalities haven't been taken seriously enough by them. I knew the victim too, and I know that there are a lot of people very hurt in the village, as he was a very popular man, and my thoughts are with his friends and family. Officers would like to speak to anyone who may have witnessed the collision, or who may have any relevant dashcam footage." The A1062. The 7.7-mile road runs from Houghton to Potterheim and links several Broads villages and tourist sites, including Bewilderwood and Howe Hill. It is designated a rural route by Norfolk County Council as part of a government scheme to improve safety. The designation is intended to remind motorists that it is a countryside route with a predominantly leisure function to encourage a different driving style. Officials have identified the A1062 as a tourism axis, and there are plans to create a walking and cycle path along it, known as the Three Rivers Way. Currently, the path only runs from Houghton to Horning. On Saturday afternoon and early evening, the road near the crash would have seen heavy traffic heading between various riverside locations to watch the Three Rivers Race, a long-distance sailing endurance event being held on the nearby waterways. You may have thought the football season was over for this summer, but you'd be wrong, because there are some qualifying matches for the World Cup played by England this week. Andorra versus England is on ITV at 2:15pm on Saturday. And Denmark-Northern Ireland, there's another one there, at 5:40 on BBC Two on Saturday. There's an England friendly versus Senegal, which I hear is going to be harder than the Andorra and England match, but we shall see. That's a 7:45 kick-off. And it's at 7pm on ITV. Sunday sees a Canadian Grand Prix in the F1. So that's on Sky Sports F1 at 6pm and 9:45. Because now it's moved from Europe to the American continent, where the timing obviously has to be different. If you're into tennis, then the grass season starts the build-up to Wimbledon with a Queen's Club Championship this week on BBC Two, mainly at 1pm, although on Wednesday, for some reason, it's on BBC One at 2pm, followed by 3pm on BBC Two. You'll have to keep that in mind. There's a Diamond League Athletics meeting on BBC Three on Thursday at 7pm, if that's your sport. And that's enough of the sport for this week. Here are some other programmes you might like to see. On Monday, the 9th of June, there is Shardlake on ITV. This is a historic mystery about a 16th century lawyer whose disability makes him something of an outcast in a prejudicial Tudor society. Henry VIII's right-hand man sends him to investigate a murder in a remote monastery. On Sunday, Back to Sunday. Why has that come after Monday? Sorry, I've done my notes in a hurry, obviously. Sunday at 9 p.m. is The Gold on BBC One. And this is the second series of a crime drama about the 1983 Brinks Mats robbery. And apparently in the first season, about half of the £26 million in gold bullion has been found. But this is inspired by some of the theories about what happened to the other half of the stolen gold. And this stars Hugh Bonneville, who is very well known in his Downton Abbey days. And in this, he plays the DCS Brian Boyce. And he's now on the trail of the other missing half of the proceeds. On Thursday, the 12th of June, if you've been watching BBC's Last of Who Do You Think You Are, and you're going to miss it after this week, when I think it's the last in the series, on Thursday of the 12th of June on ITV, there's another programme on similar lines called DNA Journey. And in this series, Faye Ripley and Hermione, in the first episode, they're both Cold Feet co-stars. They are the two people who go together on a DNA journey. They're not necessarily connected, although sometimes in the series they found themselves to be distant relatives. We'll see what happens to Faye Ripley and Hermione Norris. On Friday is the start of a new series of Not Going Out, which stars Lee Mack. And in the first episode, Lee and Lucy experience the competitive house buying market after making plans to vacate their empty nest property now that their children are at university. I hope you'll find something there that you'll enjoy watching.
The overture from Bizet's Carmen from the Berlin Philharmonic, the F1 race's long-standing podium music. Right, sit up and pay attention as Margaret and Desney recite the rest of this week's local news.
It's an unusual bid to boost afternoon productivity, but the region is seeing a rise in businesses paying for free lunches for staff. And furthermore, in their determination to beat the afternoon slump, bosses are answering calls to cut out energy-sapping, ultra-processed foods. Instead, they are fuelling their workers with healthy lunchtime alternatives to supermarkets sandwiches, sausage rolls, ready meals and packets of crisps. Great Yarmouth-based pharmaceuticals manufacturer Aeropack is one of the firms in the region already seeing the benefits of offering its 150-strong workforce free but healthy lunches. They are eating healthier now because we're providing more nutritious meals compared to what we used to a few years ago, Steve Marsh, site manager at Aeropack's Gapton Hall Industrial Estate base, said. We want people to eat healthily because it's good for their well-being, which means they will hopefully take off less time sick and won't be as lethargic in the afternoons after eating a heavy lunch. It's about them not having to think about sorting themselves out a nutritious meal for the day, because they have a choice of healthy meals at work. Aeropack is part of the Diamed group and manufactures products such as Bazooka's Veruca and wart treatments, earwax treatments for Otex and Ibuleve's pain relief gels. Lowestoft-based catering company Funnels Kitchen has been supplying meals for Aeropack staff since 2009. Meals include rainbow salads, high-protein Korean chicken bowls, homemade hot pots, hearty vegetable chilies, and slow-cooked braised beef brisket with barbecue mixed beans. They're called rainbow bowls because they're so colourful, and if you're eating colour, there's a very good chance you are eating nutritionally, Nick Phillips, Managing Director of Funnels Kitchen, said. Generally, brown and beige foods are more likely to be processed and less nutritious. The supermarket meal deals are very different. They're squeezed out of a metal tube on a production line somewhere, whereas ours are all handmade. Mr. Phillips said daytime staff have reported having more energy in the afternoons, but it is the night shift workers who have benefited most. Night shift workers have always been neglected, he said. They are generally stuck to a vending machine full of rubbish. We leave the right amount of meals in the fridge so even the night shift is covered. The free meals are a win-win. It saves employees an awful lot of money, helping them to eat healthy, and it also increases productivity and profitability for employers. Ultra-processed foods typically contain one or more ingredients that would never or rarely be found in home cooking, like additives, preservatives, and artificial sweeteners. They often contain high levels of saturated fat, sugar, and salt, and have been linked to an increased risk of heart disease, type 2 diabetes, obesity, and certain cancers. The term comes from the NOVA food classification system, which was developed by researchers at the University of Sao Paulo in Brazil. They can significantly affect energy levels, with added fats and sugars leading to rapid energy spikes followed by crashes. More than half of the calories an average person in the UK consumes comes from ultra-processed foods. Examples of ultra-processed foods include meats like ham and sausages, mass-produced bread with a long shelf life, sugary breakfast cereals and fizzy drinks. Bread can be nutritious, Mr. Phillips said. Homemade bread is great if it is just oil, flour, yeast and water. But when it comes to ultra-processed bread, our guts are not able to process it as well. Sandwiches, sausage rolls and packets of crisps for lunch are most people's downfall. Your blood sugar levels will spike, and that will drop so quick. An hour later, you're slumped and hungry again. Eating colour is the key to making you feel better and giving you much more of a lift in the afternoon, says she that likes an after-lunch nap. I'm sorry about that. Eating too many crisps.
It might be a case of third-time lucky for a man hoping to build three bungalows on a farm on the coast. James Colclough of JDC Developers is seeking permission to build the houses on a builder's yard east of Manship's Farm Cottage on Main Road in Ormsby. Two recent applications, also for three houses on the site, were refused by Great Yarmouth Borough Council. But planners are now recommending the latest bid is approved when it comes before the Council's Development Management Committee on Wednesday, June 4th. According to a report prepared ahead of the meeting, the proposal has been heavily revised after negotiations between Mr. Colclough and the planning officials. The scheme would now see the demolition of the existing buildings on the builder's yard and the erection of three linked dwellings in a farmstead-style development. Ormsby St Margaret with Scratby Parish Council has raised issues with regard to the accessibility of the proposed housing to the village, concerns about the speed of traffic in the location and the potential for parking overspill on the highway.
A 16-year-old runner made history after breaking the 12-second 100-metre milestone. Maisie Boylan, an athlete from the Great Yarmouth District Athletics Club, achieved the 100-metre feat with a time of 11.96 seconds. In addition to this, Boylan set up a new personal best in the 200 metres at Lee Valley, clocking in at 24.17 seconds. This qualifies her for the Commonwealth Youth Games, as the qualifying time is 24.5 seconds.
Plans to almost double the size of an amusement arcade on Yarmouth's seafront are set to be given the go-ahead despite concerns over its size. Family Amusements, which operates the arcade at the Wellington Pier, is seeking permission to extend the building to create a new family entertainment centre. Planning officers at Great Yarmouth Borough Council have recommended councillors approve the scheme when it goes to the Development Management Committee on Wednesday, June the 4th. Wednesday, June the 4th seems to be a very busy day for all these meetings. Historic England has warned, however, that the proposed building would be a large utilitarian addition to the seafront. The heritage body initially objected to the plans and still has concerns over the scale of the proposal, but has welcomed amendments to the design. The applicant previously said the extension will blend into the environment and will also be screened from South Beach Parade, hidden behind the cafe buildings along the street. The proposed expansion would be built on currently unused land that once hosted an outdoor roller skating rink. The plans also include a secondary street entrance and staff parking in a semi-basement below the new structure. If approved, the development is expected to create 20 full-time and 10 part-time jobs. Wellington Pier, a 700-foot wooden structure, was opened on Halloween 1853, having cost £6,776 to build. But 5 years later, a second pier was built close to the Wellington, and this had a severe financial effect on the profitability of the pier. In 1899, Great Yarmouth Corporation bailed out the failing business for the sum of £1,250. In 1996, comedian Jim Davidson took on the lease and invested about £750,000 into the pier's interior. 6 years later, it was taken over by Family Amusements.
And more about the future of care homes. A controversial shake-up, which could mean private firms take over residential homes run by Norfolk County Council's own care company, has come under fire. Critics accused County Hall of mismanagement, neglect and failing to invest in care homes, as Conservative leaders paved the way for huge changes which would affect hundreds of people. But council leaders said the potential sale of more than 30 care homes and housing with care schemes will lead to better quality care and the best value for Norfolk taxpayers. Cabinet members agreed on Monday to invite care providers to express their interest in taking on residential care homes currently run by the council's Norse Care Company and set in motion the process which would see homes sold. Andrew Jameson, the council's deputy leader, confirmed Norse Care will definitely not continue to run any of those homes, although it could yet tender to keep running its housing with care schemes. But Steve Morphew, leader of the Labour group, said, "Through neglect, mismanagement and failure to invest, this Conservative administration has turned a profitable, well-run service consistently rated as outstanding into a loss-making, outdated shell of its former self. They are lining up privatisation, asset stripping and closures under the guise of attracting investment. They could have invested themselves when interest rates were low and we'd have modern, fit-for-purpose, profitable homes we would be proud of. They borrowed to upgrade County Hall in preference to care homes. Norse Care run homes in Brundle, Wotton and Terrington St John have already shut, with the company saying they were no longer fit for purpose. Independent councillor Alexandra Kemp warned the approach would lead to the private sector cherry-picking or asset-stripping properties. But Mr Jameson said, "We want to turbocharge the transformation of the Norse Care estate so that in the near future, Norfolk residents will have access to top-quality, specialist care in modern care homes, whilst at all times ensuring Norfolk taxpayers receive the best value for their hard-earned pounds." He said possible approaches could see providers take on all or some of the homes or firms entering into partnership with the council to provide beds. Mr Jameson, who acknowledged some care homes could close, said previously planned investment had been stifled by the COVID pandemic and rising interest rates.
Homes bid for council land at Acle and Hopton. New homes could be built on almost 65 acres of land across two Norfolk villages after council leaders agreed to make the sites available. The Norfolk County Council-owned land in Acle and Hopton-on-Sea is to be transferred to County Hall's Repton Property Developments Company. The Conservative-controlled council's cabinet agreed at a meeting on Monday, June the 2nd, to transfer 41 acres at Mill Farm in Acle and 23 acres off the A47 at Hopton-on-Sea so that homes can be built there. The land will pass over to Repton Property Developments, which the authority set up to develop sites for homes on council land with the help of private house building companies. The company has already built homes at St Edmunds Park in Acle and at Bowlers Green at Hopton-on-Sea. It would need to secure planning permission for the new developments. Jane James, the council's cabinet member for corporate services and innovation, said Repton Property Developments had helped to get fantastic properties built. The idea is that the council sells off surplus land to the property company, which then works with the house builder to construct the homes, but there has been previous criticism over the approach. The company is named after the 19th century landscape designer Humphrey Repton. The cabinet meeting where the transfer was agreed also saw councillors agree to dispose of several other properties and land. That includes what used to be Caister Community Hub off the High Street in Caister-on-Sea, which closed its doors in February this year. The council intends to sell the building, which dates back to 1912, along with adjoining land to a developer so a residential independent living scheme can be built. Farmland at Burlingham Green in Lingwood and about 1.7 acres of land at Hockham, acquired for a highways project but never used, are also to be sold off by the council, which needs to make £41.5 million of cuts and savings next year.
New school places for Norfolk children with autism are to be created thanks to a businessman once linked with the takeover of Norwich City Football Club. Norfolk County Council has agreed to accept a £2.2 million donation from the Cullum Family Trust, set up by Norwich-born businessman Peter Cullum, CBE, to create two new specialist resource bases in association with the National Autistic Society. Those centres at the Wensum Trust-run Acle Academy and Alderman Peel High School in Wells Neck the Sea would provide specialist support to help autistic children thrive within mainstream school. The trust would put £1.1 million into the new bases, which would be known as Cullum Centres at each school, with County Hall providing the remaining £2.5 million cost. Each base would have spaces for 25 children. The County Council would need to secure planning permission for the bases, but hopes they can open in September next year. The Cabinet at County Hall agreed to accept the donation at a meeting on Monday, June the 2nd. County Councillor Fran Wymark said, "I really welcome this report. Keeping people in their own community is really important. My son has autism and we fought to keep him in our local school. It made a massive difference because he remained part of the community. They need a different approach sometimes or a different amount of support. I think this gives them what they need to remain in the community and learn, as every child should have the opportunity." Andrew Jameson, the council's deputy leader, thanked the Cullum Family Trust for the significant contribution. He said, "It's well known that the special school system remains under significant pressure and strain. This will help to mitigate that, so I am extremely grateful for this 2.2 external investment." In 2008, Mr. Cullum held talks with Delia Smith and Michael Wynne-Jones and was reportedly ready to put £20 million into the club to buy players. But Carrow Road bosses said a further £16 million would be needed to buy out shares, £16 million to pay off debts and another £4 million to repay loans from existing directors, a total of at least £56 million. The talks went no further.
Well, that's it for this week's edition, which is copyright 2025 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Your newsreaders next week will again be Desney and Margaret, so we hope for your company then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all of us here at Grapevine, we hope for some summery weather, but in any event, stay safe and well, and bye for now.